Hi, my name is Marty McGowan III. This is the 16th of December. We're at my brother Vince's house in Eagan, Minnesota, and I'm here to interview my father, Martin McGowan Jr., on the occasion of a Christmas family gathering.
My name is Martin J. McGowan Jr. This interview is being recorded at the home of my son, Vincent L. McGowan, of Eagan, Minnesota, on December 16, 2007.
Okay, so we're here to celebrate the
occasion of a family gathering of seven of our, well, I guess we're going to have all of them here.
Right.
Nine children gathered tonight for particularly to visit our son Sean, who is visiting us here in Eagan in Minnesota at the moment.
Okay, yes, probably worth saying then right away that Sean's health is not the best. Sean is 55 years old. 54. We're also here with brother Brendan and my mother Elizabeth Betty Nolan McGowan are in the room. Sean is living in Las Vegas and suffering a form of leukemia, and the family is gathered to be with him at Christmas time. So I guess maybe this leads to what about the family? We're nine children, so tell us about how the family grew.
It's surprising how the family grew. The first 3 years we had three of them: Martin the Third, Daniel Patrick, and Margaret Eleanor. And then there was a gap of 4 or 5 years when we had three more, starting with our host tonight, Vincent, and then Kevin was next, and Sean, the one we're visiting tonight, particular attention, was the sixth. Then there was kind of a mixed gap along the way for the last three that we had Brendan and Maureen and Michael. They are all very industrious people who work hard, study hard, have done well in life so far. I never thought that I would, at age 86, be able to see this family, particularly sons at 62, 61, and a daughter at 60. I didn't think I would be around that long to enjoy them and to work with them. I think I have been honored to have this family, and they have honored me in return. And I'm grateful for the courtesies and the help that they have shown me. My health at this time is failing a bit, but I still enjoy their company, and we try often to get together as much as possible.
When you do age comparison, something you said earlier this evening, you were noting your father's age. He made it to 66, and so some of your surprise is that you're going strong at 86 and reflected in the lives of your oldest children relative to how old you might have been.
Well, I was married at age 23, and the family started coming in the first year. So I didn't know what was going to follow, but it turned out to be quite a revelation to have this large a family. I am an only child from my father's family because my mother died when I was a year and a half old. She contracted TB from a patient in a Swedish hospital now in Minneapolis, and there was little that could be done for tuberculosis in 1923, and so she was sent to North Woods, up north in Minnesota, to a sanitarium to absorb the fresh air, and that was the only treatment that could be administered. So I have never known my mother. I have a faint hope, that in the years following, I might be able to finally see her in person.
you're looking forward to eternal reward and joining her there. That was going to be my question. You, I guess I'd never heard if you ever actually knew or had any memory of your mother, but I guess not.
No, I do not. I have a picture, some pictures of me at that early age. There's one picture I saved, which is showing my godfather uncle bending over on the front sidewalk of our home to speak to me, and I stood there with a full head of hair and holding my mouth sort of bashful-like to be in this spot. I also have a picture of myself standing in the window of a Model T Ford that we apparently had when I was a youngster. But I don't remember that car, but the picture shows me there, and that was one of my fondest memories of the Model T Ford, not knowing much about it, but looking out the window.
You talk about pictures of the family. I remember thank Meg for posting on the website the tremendous genealogy work she's done. Photos taken, obviously, I think, in the backyard at Appleton with your large family then. When do you remember the family gatherings, and what do you remember of those?
Well, those were always outstanding events. The children got together and started enjoying each other's company to learn what they had been doing and what their life experiences had been. And I enjoyed hearing those discussions. And they all had differing views of what to do, and being able to meld all these stories into one family history was most enlightening to me.
The people in the pictures that I remember were your cousins, Mary Jo, Pat, your cousin
Bill.
Yes, that was a famous photo. We stood in a line. Well, the parents stood in a line on my father's yard, and all us youngsters were crouched on the ground in front of them. There seemed to be a prime interest in the naval sword my Uncle Leo had. And he was a graduate of Annapolis in the era of World War II. No, I take that back. He couldn't have been. Shows you what happens here. I'm losing memories already. But Bill McGowan was one of the more individualistic of this generation. And I think he won the battle to hold the naval sword in the reunion group.
Okay, so your cousin, or I'm sorry, Uncle Leo was a naval officer from between the wars, I'm thinking. Is that?
Yes, he was. And I'm trying to think which brand of service. I think it was the submarine service, but I stand to be corrected on that if I'm wrong. But he contracted brain injuries and heart problems, and he died in 1939 when I was in college. I never had too much contact with him, but I did appreciate when he came home for visits at our hometown of Appleton, Minnesota, and enlightened us about his experiences. But he is buried in what's the name of the National Cemetery?
Arlington,
and his daughter, Molly, a very charming young woman, died at about age 16. We had a large portrait of her on the wall, and she was a very beautiful young woman, and we're sorry to lose her, but she was the only child of that marriage.
Your father and his brothers, your father at that time had the newspaper in Appleton, Minnesota, and brothers in Benson had the newspapers there at the time of this photo and through the 30s. You talk about your memories of those.
Yes, it was a family operation. My father, the oldest, was kind of the leader of the group, but he had to start work in the ninth grade or drop out of work to go to work when his father died. And he started work, as I recall, as a night clerk in the hotel in Benson, Minnesota, and the other sons and daughters followed. Our father purchased the newspaper, the Appleton Press, in nearby Appleton, Minnesota, and brought with him several family members. My uncle godfather, Francis R. Raphael, it was the middle initial name, later changed it around when he was admitted to military service in World War I. His name was changed to Pfaff. That's what the family called him, Pfaff, for Raphael. But he was the salesman and ad salesman for the newspaper. My aunt and Gertrude, who was the oldest of the women in the family, became the bookkeeper and news gatherer. And Joseph McGowan took linotype training in Chicago and then became the linotype operator. And I forget just how the other jobs were distributed, but there were several family members running this newspaper in Appleton, Minnesota. They started in 1914 and proceeded to operate in a Main Street location, but then moved and built their own building in a nearby street that served as the newspaper headquarters for many years following.
And some of the brothers had the papers in Benson at the, for the same period of time?
That is true. Joseph, the one who took the linotype training, bought the Swift County Monitor at Benson, and then there later he purchased a tabloid paper, the Swift County News, which was put out on Tuesdays. The Monitor, the main paper, came out on Fridays. And he, my uncle, obtained a contract to publish the Minnesota Legionnaire, that is the paper of the Minnesota American Legion. And he also, in doing this, acquired the first rotary press we had. It was that newspaper for the Legion had a wide circulation and needed the kind of press that he obtained. Joe was also the postmaster of Benson and engaged in several formalities and work, hard work. He, my aunt, his wife, had to review the editorials that my uncle wrote to be sure that he didn't say anything indiscreet, which should have been a policy that I had followed myself, because I was not so discreet in my observations, and our income was affected by the response I received from some newspapers in the various towns I operated newspapers later.
I'm sure we'll get to some of those. I think of Blue Earth, Minnesota. I'd like to talk about, if you go through your college years, but really interested in getting to those were the war years, and you came home to run and help your father with the newspaper, and you know, pick a story from that era, if you would.
Yes, I thought I would be drafted or go to military service. I was of the prime age, so I first tried to enlist in the Coast Guard, and I made a special trip to Chicago to try to enlist, but it happened that I was allergic to several things that caused my incapacity at various times, and the military decided that I would spend more time in the hospital than I would serving the government, so they ruled me out for the Coast Guard. Then the military draft we had in those years called me. I had to go down with some others from Swift County in a bus to Fort Snelling near St. Paul, Minnesota, and the doctor there noted that I had been rejected by the Coast Guard, and I had a sheet of my things that bothered me. The strangest thing, the most bothering items I tried to avoid were beer, cigarettes, and feather pillows. And I got in trouble with those various things when I tried them out and thought it would be all right, but it didn't work. So finally, I thought, well, I'll try once more. And I wrote to the military in Winnipeg, Canada, and said, I'm having trouble getting into the service. I'd like to serve. Do you have something for me? And they wrote back and said, well, no, if the United States doesn't want you, I'm afraid we can't use you either. So I figured that was enough. Three times and out, I was not going to make the military.
And when exactly would that have been? I'm kind of interested in relation to when you met Mom and you know, you were just out of college, or precisely when was this?
Well, I came back to Appleton, and it just happened that my father's linotype operator decided he wanted to go home to a town in northern Minnesota, and he resigned his job with our newspaper on Christmas and left the first of the year. Well, there we were in the middle of the war years. I had just graduated from Notre Dame and the University of Missouri School of Journalism, and I was free. I had to do a correspondence course to make up for the year that I spent in journalism school and then went back to liberal arts. So I came home and I was free to take a job, and I thought my father has sent me through the University of Notre Dame at considerable expense. There were no aid programs available. He had to take it right out of his pocket to pay my way. We decided in August of 1942 that I graduated in January 1941, and that isn't right either, in January 1939. And then I...
sure it wasn't 42.
Yeah, it would
January
be.
42.
January 42. And I said, well, used to be an advertisement shown of people who wanted to play the piano. And the ad said, they laughed when I sat down to play the piano. And this person was supposed to have learned the hard way by sitting and doing. And I thought, well, I can do that. I'll try it. I'll sit and learn how to run the linotype. It's completely foreign to me. And the keyboard is quite different. But it was an absolute necessity to have this device working. So we prevailed upon the son of the editor at nearby Milan, Minnesota, 7 miles away, to come up and set type for us nights. And I tried and learned how to set type during the day. Well, it took me until March, 3 months, that I was willing to try letting the operator from Milan quit, and I would do it all. But that meant a pretty long schedule, nights and nights learning to do it. But in time, I became a rather proficient operator. In fact, I was a sports writer for the paper at the time, and I decided instead of typing a copy to be set on the linotype, I would compose the stories on the linotype and eliminate that one step. So we got along quite well, and my father went in the back shop to work again on composing the paper, putting it together in the locked-up chase, they call them, of square that held the type. And he would carry this heavy chase full of type back to the printing press, put four pages on the press at a time. And then I was a tall person around, so I would stand up. In fact, I started doing this long before I ever finished school. I think in the 10th grade I learned how to feed sheets of newsprint into the press, and learned that skill as well. But it ruined my father's health. And so after the war in about 1947, I was, is that possible? Yeah. Yeah. My father's health was ruined, and we were able to get help again. So we hired a new linotype operator, and I became the editor, and my father was the publisher.
And one of the things we were discussing earlier this evening, of course, the Martini's column was your father's signature, and you were the Cub reporter. When did the Cubs Corner start, if you would?
Well, yes. my aim in this business really was to be able to write and not publish or set type on the linotype. So I started writing a column. I said I really started in sports writing and photography. I used to take pictures of sporting events and have them made into printing plates that we put in the press. But I started this column called The Cubs Corner, because I was just a Cub reporter, a beginner, and my father used his own name, Martinez, and he had a very famous column in West Central Minnesota among the newspapers of the state. And I started writing and contributing. To my amazement, later there we had a so-called Redex survey to see what various things in the paper, how they were popular and how they were appreciated. And to my amazement, my Redex survey total edged my father by a point or two. I couldn't believe it. It wasn't true in my mind. It couldn't have been. But I guess I wrote on different things. He was a humorist. And I was writing a little more seriously, I guess.
Let's see, that the Cubs Corner happened in the late 40s, and you continue that in the Appleton Press through the 50s anyway.
Yes, I guess I continued it in the any paper that I worked in or owned. Acquired the two papers at Benson, Minnesota, published them for 2 years, and I had a column. I don't remember if I used the Cubs Corner there, but I know when I later moved on and I was married and our family was growing, I needed a larger newspaper, and we had a trial run on Channel 2 television, the public television station in the Twin Cities, and that lasted a while, 5 years, and then a couple of years running a work, well, let's see, I worked for Channel 2, and then that lasted about 2 years, and I went back in the newspaper business and went to, New Richmond. I published that for a year, determining, it was a trial run to see if I wanted to buy it. The other person owned it, but he had some different ideas. He used this newspaper to print his shopper from Minneapolis at non-union wages, I thought. We didn't get along. He had the policy of coming from St. Paul over to the golf club in New Richmond. He'd get the local merchant, they'd go out and hit a golf ball, but along the way, my cohort would say, we've got you down for a page ad this week. Well, I thought that was a lot of gall to tell the man he was committed to a page newspaper, a press, if he didn't want to. I thought he had to sell him on the merits of what the advertising would do, not that he owed the paper a page ad. But anyway, that didn't last too long. And another friend of mine in the newspaper business acted as a broker and came up with a newspaper in Blue Earth, near the Iowa border, Blue Earth, Minnesota. And that paper was available because the editor that I knew in earlier years was Maynard Pye Johnson, and he died and left it to his widow. Well, his widow hired a young man to run it for her, but she didn't like the arrangement and was willing to give it up, and so I bought this paper new in Blue Earth, but in due time acquired the neighboring papers at Elmore, Minnesota, right on the Iowa line, and also acquired a paper north of Blue Earth in Winnebago, and published all of these for a time. But I went on, newspapering was what I wanted to do, and I did it in several locations.
Well, in between, we skipped right past your career in the state legislature, and I'd be interested, of course, I know that A.I. Johnson was an influence there, but when did you discover the political bug and get the sense that the legislature was in it for you? How did that happen?
Well, my father was very generous in taking me with him to newspaper, to political meetings. The local editorial group in that part of the state had summer picnics, and he took me along to the picnic with the other editors, and I got acquainted that way with who they were. I recall him saying, there were lobbyists around at these conventions, and he said, you go to the Republican convention, you'll see those lobbyists trying to sell their program too. But he educated me that way, and I learned from him. I guess if there's a most important influence in my life, it was my father. I was an only son and only child in the family after my mother died, and he certainly did his best to train me, and I learned by observation and suggestion and cooperation. And so I decided in going to these political meetings that I was interested in politics. But A.I. Johnson was the current legislator at that time in Swift County. And he had been the Speaker of the House, and his wife was the push behind him. And she urged him, and he decided that the Speaker of the House might entitle him to be the congressman for the district. So he resigned from the legislature and ran for Congress and lost. But I filed in his spot for the representative for Swift County, and I won. I was quite pleased and surprised. I was only 38 at the time, considered young, I think, in most editorial realms and newspaper realms. But now today, younger people mm-hmm. running for political office is quite common. Mm-hmm. But I was 38 at the time and served 8 years and finished in 1946.
54.
Yeah, 58 through 56. 60,
I think it was 64.
You know, good.
Well, I was gonna offer that because I do remember going out and putting up posters.
Whatever.
Yeah, I was putting up posters in 1958 and 1960 elections.
We prevailed upon the family to help out.
Yeah, I actually, there's a crossover here that maybe you remember or like to talk about. I remember the particular election of 1960. When as editor publisher of the newspaper at the time, and also as running as an incumbent, there was a lot of discussion in the land with Kennedy's campaign about the effects of Catholics in office. And do you have any recollections or anything you'd like to share about your memories of that as regards to your campaign?
Well, I was kind of surprised about how I was received. I was young. My name was known in the county. And that county had always been Democratic, still is, always was. It, for some reason, that county stood out as a solid Democratic county. And so I guess I benefited from the Catholic, and there were numerous, a good Catholic population in Benson, the county seat. The east end of the county was the Republican and Protestant section of the county. But I did pretty well there, too. I went over there and I campaigned among the Lutherans in that end of the county, went to their church dinners and all, and people got acquainted with me. My name, my family name, was well known in the county, and I think it all helped. And so I was elected sort of against token opposition. The Republicans decided they couldn't let me get in easy, but so I won a good victory in my first run. In this must have been too good, because in the second time I ran, nobody filed against me. Mm-hmm. And then I had two more terms in which I ran well. I guess, as I say, the county is and always has been Democratic, and I benefited from that.
Yeah, I always said I cherish being from the last blue county and the last blue state, and I guess you did. Practically. Okay, the family grew, and there were you were alluding to a couple of moves from Appleton to St. Paul and other places in between. So if you want to talk about that, and as the family grew up and grew out, I guess.
Yes, I felt bad having to. I enjoyed being a legislator, and there were certain benefits that derived from it, but I hated to be gone from the family. It was a pretty hectic career to be publisher of a weekly newspaper, write for it, and still spend most of the week in St. Paul. I had a room in the Lowry Hotel the first time, and there I was 5 days away from my family back in Appleton. I spent my first nights in the Lowry assembling radios. I would get kits of good radios and assemble them by soldering and keeping out of mischief. I came home with something accomplished besides being in the legislature. But I enjoyed it. The first two terms, there was a conservative leadership. We didn't have party designation at the time I served. There were liberals and conservatives, which mocked their Democratic and Republican true nature. But I got to be well known in the caucus. They elected me secretary of the Liberal Caucus, and I even was elected secretary of the congressional district for a couple of years. But so I was deeply involved in politics and enjoyed it. But the family was growing also, and I felt that there was a need for a larger newspaper to support the growth of the family. And I decided when it happened one day that Senator Eugene McCarthy called me from Washington, D.C., to say that the Federal Communications had discovered that a public television station could be erected in Appleton, Minnesota. The circumstances of stations surrounding were such that a station operating on Channel 10 at Appleton would not disturb any channels in the Twin Cities, southern Minnesota, or the Dakotas. And so I helped them. We were doing what was called ETV, educational television in those days, mm-hmm. classroom instruction. Mm-hmm. So I started with the superintendent of schools, and he assembled a group of people in Appleton, and I helped them build this station in my hometown. I helped secure some federal aid and to a grant to help conduct programming on this station. And so we went from there to enlarge. There also became a public radio station there at the same time. But the family took, it didn't seem right to spend 5 days in St. Paul, rush home, pay the bills, and rush back to the St. Paul while leaving the family and our wife, my wife Betty, to take care of them. And that's quite a responsibility and a load of work to shepherd all you young folks along through the time I was gone.
I guess a story that I remember from those days was that Mom would say that when she was in St. Cloud State and ran the newspaper, that the one thing she vowed was to never marry a newspaper man. So not every promise works out, I guess. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, I'm not sure that I do. But, it's a lot of work. And we did put Betty to work in the paper. She was a handy person to do this job, that job, collect bills, take extra photos. When two men were from Waseca, Minnesota, were walking around the world, it just happened that they came back into Minnesota at about that time. And I don't know if she had to go down and at the border as they entered Minnesota, why she took the pictures of that one. She also used to go. We had special editions for hog farmers and cattle farmers, and they ran ads. And so Betty went out to their farms and took pictures of the hog farm or whatever. And when someone was reluctant to pay their bills, she was the one sent out to get the collection. So all very valuable services, and on top of having the large family, it was quite a thing.
A little bit out of sequence here, but I do remember, as we remember Sean here, and I think of him, that when he was born, you were touring with the Navy, as I recall. You want to tell us how that came about and about that trip and the little bit of history, current history connected there?
Well, yes, this was an interesting time for me. My father was still living then, and Hubert Humphrey was a good friend by this time. And so he was the one very instrumental in helping get this TV station started. He organized meetings in Washington for me to come down and appeal to the Administration on Aging to get the funds to carry a weekly program that I moderated about senior citizens. This was a research grant to determine whether or not senior citizens learned anything by television. And to do this, we organized viewing groups to be quizzed later, but we were being broadcast over the state television network in Duluth, Twin Cities, Appleton, and the Dakotas. So it worked out quite well, but I had a pretty busy schedule, and that I got the newspapers all going, and that was a load too after I left the legislature. I got the larger markets and did work in several towns.
I guess Blue Earth then would have been the longest, and fine, and I guess where the family grew up and grew out was Blue Earth. So how long were you there, and tell us about that paper and some of the things that happened there.
My recollection is that it was 8 years that we were in Blue Earth, and this was not a friendly political town for me to be in, and we did well there, though. I also had the newspapers in Winnebago, north of Blue Earth, and when at its height, I was able to publish 7 full-page grocery ads in the 3 towns at once, and that was very prosperous. They don't do that anymore. Now they have pre-printed advertising circulars that are stuffed in the paper but not printed by the paper. But this all was helpful and expanded our circulation. And also, I got to help build another cable TV system in Wells, Minnesota, as the newspapers faded out while television came in.
So you you saw that you participated in the in that transition. Blue Earth, you were there 8 years, and a couple of things after that before you finally retired. We were talking about that a little bit earlier.
Well, this was not a friendly town politically. They had a conservative mayor who had been in office for years, and he was, by the tradition of his political following, he was very conservative. And I remember how I used to watch the curb and gutter crumble during his administration. And I noted politically that this was we needed better city services, and among them were the curb and gutter. Well, the townspeople, he didn't like that. The mayor didn't appreciate this, criticizing him. He was saving money, he thought, letting the curbs and gutters tip off into the street. But lo and behold, when he finally decided, after about 6 years of this criticism by me and townspeople too, that he better do something about it. And I had predicted that when this would come about to be changed and modernized, curbs and gutters put in our streets, it did cost a fortune, and the taxpayers paid up in the end anyway. And I wasn't I was not well liked among the conservatives, although I will say I awakened some surprising followers in the school, and even our Catholic pastor turned out for caucuses and voted. So I had some followers, but not always popular.
I was thinking about your time at St. Benedict's and at Volkmuth Publishing. You moved up to the St. Cloud area and were there for a number of years, and then you time on the lake in Brainerd and in Mom's roots, and now you're back in St. Paul. We've got a few minutes left if you want to cover that period of your life to now.
Well, that'll be interesting to wrap it up that way. I did well in Blue Earth, and was grateful for the fact that many people did support me. But I thought I was called upon to do something different, and there were buyers waiting to acquire some of these papers. So I did have a chance to work at the College of St. Benedict. I was hired to publicize the school, and I thought hired to write publicity. I wrote those little snippets you see in some newspapers, how this week Joe and Joe so and so was on the honor roll, and sent it to the newspaper in that town, and somebody else did something else. They were elected captain of the basketball team, then go to that town, and so on and so on. I asked the president of the university, don't I belong to publicize the entire university? That's what I thought I was hired for, not these little snippets of local short stories or short paragraphs. But no, they prevailed, and so we disagreed to disagree, and I left and went to work for Volkmuth Printing in St. Cloud. There I was an account rep, and the purpose of it was to, we would print their circulars, and I shepherded their job through the printing process is actually what we did. Mm-hmm. And that worked out fine, but finally a time came to call it quits. I did my job at the university, I thought, and decided at 62 or 63, I guess I was at the time, to retire.
Okay, well, just a few minutes we got left here. We're gathered with the family. Is there anything you'd like to say in you know, memory, thoughts of the family? You know, we're going to do this with other members, but you know, this is our first family interview. Is there, what would you like to say at this Christmas time with the family gathered, just in behalf of everybody here?
Well, I think it's really outstanding to have this family gathering. They don't happen too often, and we're sorry that it's for a reason of health. But the family has always been something for me to watch, as all of them have grown and prospered. And I'm most proud of this family, and I'm glad that we can say so at this Christmas season. And wish them well in the years ahead. They have made me proud and happy to be the head of this family, and I look forward to their success to follow mine.
Thank you very much. Good evening, and Merry Christmas, Dad.
Merry Christmas to all.